I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do drugs.
I play video games.
News from the Boomer with your hosts, John DeLuna, XB,
X-Chicken,
Weebum.
Damn right I am.
And Rob.
Here we go.
News from the Boomer.
So now everything after that has to be the same thing again, but it doesn't.
That's true. So they've kind of fallen in love with this idea.
Well, and the Wii was about the hardware gimmick, too. That just has not proven to be such a success as what the DS did.
Mm-hmm.
And the 3DS proved that you can't do the same thing over again and expect it to be the same result.
Mm-hmm.
The last time Nintendo had a really, truly successful piece of hardware, it wasn't just about what the hardware was, it was the Game Boy Advance. And even then, it took till the SP revision before that really became the truth.
That's true. When the hardware was kind of refined and perfected.
When the hardware became awesome, and you could actually enjoy the games they had for it, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is still, I guess, my biggest thing is not to, like, rag on the Wii U too much. I mean, we'll have to rag on other things. It's just that I still don't get it. I still don't understand why they think this is such a good idea to have essentially a tablet controller mashed together with a Wii, with all this other, and now all this outdated social media interfaces that exist elsewhere in better forms. I don't understand. I guess I don't understand the big picture. Like, I don't understand what their big idea was. Like, if you could take the Wii U and write, like, a statement about it on a chalkboard and say, here is the big idea. I don't see one.
The big idea with the Wii U is the same big idea with the GameCube, which is, we're trying to catch up. The Nintendo 64 was something totally different from anything anybody else was doing at the time, and it was, you know, a success for Nintendo, even though it was not exactly what the rest of the industry was doing at the time. Likewise, the Wii. And then the GameCube was them trying to kind of get back towards the rest of the industry, which is kind of what we're doing here, I think.
And the thing with the Nintendo 64 is the PlayStation was doing some of that stuff already, but Nintendo was actually able to get out ahead to make the Nintendo 64 do it better.
Yeah.
I think what makes this extra sad, too, is, I mean, to you guys, to your points, it's just so blatant that this is a catch-up, because it's like our version, like I said, our version of Facebook, our version of Skype, our version of Twitter, our version of a tablet.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, well, we've had that for like 3 years, so... Yeah.
I don't understand why they don't just do what the other two companies have done and just do an agreement with them. But although there are no APIs for it, I guess, so they can't do that anyway.
Well, I mean, there's... I'd feel like... Okay, so if they're trying to sell the Wii U as, like, this social device, it doesn't matter what the financials are or whether or not... Or control or anything like that. If you turned it on and it had a bunch of icons at the bottom, there's the Twitter icon, the Facebook icon, the Skype icon, a couple other things that maybe they invented, I guess, to go along with that. That would speak to me more as like, oh, this is like connected to the world, than I turn it on and it's just a bunch of like Nintendo Universe programs and things to do. You know what I mean? It's like, well, okay, it's just a bunch of like cute things I can do on the system, but it's not social at all, because it's not, it's literally antisocial, because it's not connected to the rest of the world. It's just connected to their own world. You know what I mean? It's not at all what they're saying it is.
I assume this has like a native web browser in it too, right?
Yeah, it does.
See, what it's starting to strike me as is Nintendo's trying to do web TV again.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, that's kind of what it looks like. It's got shades of everything in it. It's really just a bunch of pre-existing or old ideas. And the other thing too is, so we've gone through this presentation so far, and we're talking about like rip-offs of existing programs. That's all it is. It's like it's not like, this is our version of Skype and we took it to the next level. We're like, this is Twitter.
Right.
And we thought Twitter was a good start, but here's where we took it. No, it's like, it is Twitter and that is all it is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, weird. Here it comes.
The Miiverse.
They just did called the Nintendo Network, which gives you Wii U, 3DS, and the rest of the future Nintendo devices.
Oh, yay.
Yay. Yeah.
All right.
Although, well, interestingly enough, there's a job posting, apparently, on Time Warner's website, career website, that they're looking to develop HBO Go for Wii U.
Okay. I mean, I guess the problem again with that is right now I can get HBO Go on my iPhone, my iPad. Xbox. I don't know if they may have an Android app.
HBO Go, you have to have HBO service through your cable provider already, right?
Yes.
Yes,
so,
you do.
Right now you do.
You know, having HBO Go on the device hooked up to your TV, lateral move, maybe?
That's true, yeah. I like to take that extra step.
I get the same monitor, but now I'm going to watch HBO through this alternate device instead of my proper cable box.
That's right. Well, sometimes you like to work a little harder.
HBO Go is like their on-demand service, right?
It's their on-demand service, but still.
Yeah, it doesn't really make that very different, does it?
Yeah.
No, because I imagine most of our cable providers have some kind of on-demand, you know, that you can access if you're subscribed to HBO.
Sure, they do.
They do.
And right now, I mean, and now, you know, they're showing, we've seen this technology before, where you can move whatever you're watching on the tablet controller, you can flick it and move it to the big screen. But again, that's not impressive. I mean, there's several devices that do that now. So you can't showcase that and call that like a significant feature. Because again, I mean, this is all stuff that we've seen before.
Oh God, browser becomes entertainment.
Cripes.
It'd be better if it was Bowser, and he came along dancing.
That's really?
That's our Bowser.
Like,
yes.
Hey guys, guess what? The internet has videos.
Yes, naughty videos.
Oh. So what they're gonna do is they're gonna roll out their own version of YouTube.
Yes. Oh, I can only hope.
Roll out their own version of the browser of the internet.
Ooh, yes, I can only hope.
They're gonna make their own internet.
Yeah,
and those problems were.
No kidding.
Nobody doing anything.
Yeah. They're quoting Miyamoto now, so.
Consoles creating dust, funnies.
You know, when Miyamoto dies, they're gonna quote him like any great poet. Like I'm sure 9 out of 10 Nintendo presentations will start or end with a quote from the great Miyamoto.
I'm assuming there will actually be quotes, like, on the bottom of the presentation. You know, like, where the footers and stuff are. It would just be, like, something, 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 Miyamoto. And it would be, like, every day it'll change. It would just be, like, a random array of just, like, quotes.
Yeah, well, I mean, I want it to get more and more, like, boring. And just the mundane quotes. Like, you know, I like mustard with my french fries. Miyamoto. kind of thing. It's like, I don't feel great today. Miyamoto. I have a gray puke.
Image. Oh, God.
Thing. Well, that was fun. While we're watching this, too, you know, the other thing is there's two more companies, obviously. They're going to do their thing at E3. I think everybody is expecting Microsoft to do just essentially a victory lap and just say, hey, one more year, you know, we're awesome. We won this round. And maybe show a little bit of the last Halo game for this generation, maybe Forza, I guess, but nobody's really expecting much from the 360. They may drop hints about the 720 or whatever it is. They said they wouldn't show it. It doesn't mean they can't talk about it or try to blow Nintendo off at the knees by just kind of like hinting at the 720. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then there's Sony. Sony really needs something. So they've got the game that everybody's looking forward to at the end of the year, which is The Last of Us. But other than that, I don't know. I don't know what else they can do other than say, hey, next year the PlayStation 4 is going to come out and we're gonna get it right this time. This is essentially Nintendo's E3 to win or lose. I mean, everybody's just kind of watching them. The other thing, too, about this, though, isn't this essentially a repeat of last generation? Where Nintendo, like, they jump out with technology that catches up. It's all about the gimmick. And everybody's like, you know, well, Nintendo, at least they're out first. And then a year later, or 9 months later, when the other two companies come out with their actual next generation level hardware, everybody literally forgets about Nintendo, and everybody just gets gobsmacked by the super awesome tech of the other companies.
The problem is, though, the Wii was out after the 360.
Yeah, I mean, it was, so, but...
I mean, they didn't even get to get that, you know, first-to-market jump with that.
Now, that's true. That's true. The 360 had the first-to-market and was superior to at least the Wii.
Well, yeah, the Wii was basically an Xbox in new clothes.
Yes.
Technological capability-wise.
Basically.
GameCube.
I think it was a little bit beyond the game.
Two GameCubes.
Yeah, it was more like a PS2.
Yeah. They were trying to, you know.
Actually, there's evidence that it's basically a PS2 because the studios that would do the PS2 ports of the 360 and PS3 games would generally also release on Wii. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it had to be basically equivalent then.
That's interesting. Yeah.
But, see, that's kind of the thing with this, though, is why can't Nintendo do what they did again with the 64? You know, why can't they make that next half step forward and actually be on the leading edge anymore?
I think there may be several reasons. I think one is Nintendo seems to be really conservative these days. So they seem to only go with what is tested and true as far as ideas go. I'm honestly a little surprised that they even got the 3D in the 3DS out, because you could argue that was a little bit of a gamble, certainly more than what they usually do. But for the most part, so this, and this worked with the Wii. We're going to do this with the Wii. Twitter, Facebook, Skype, people seem to like it. We're going to do that. You know, we're not going to...
Well,
we're not,
not...
Well, okay, yeah.
I just can't believe that they spent all this time to incorporate these things and still... It feels like they aren't talking about any of the games. They aren't talking about the processing. They aren't talking about, like, you know, what your experience is going to be like, other than the fact that you can throw ninja stars from the screen to... from your pad to
the TV.
Yeah, to your TV, and it's like, it's not, it doesn't feel like, it just seems like they wasted so much time on recreating these experiences that already exist.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, functionally, it's a DS where the top screen is your TV.
Yeah.
It feels like a waste of time, is what I guess I should say.
Yeah, that's a great point. And the only game,
actually, to Rob's point there, that actually... in a way, is a sensible move because the DS was so successful. So, of course, they're going to want to try to make that work at the console level where they can do a lot more with it. But I still think it's misguided.
Yeah, I agree. No, I mean, I think that's a great point to look at as like an oversized DS. The other thing, too, is so in that pre-E3 thing that we saw, and by the time this show airs, we'll know a lot more. But the only games that they showed was Wii U Super Mario, which looks like New Super Mario Brothers Wii, literally. It looks just like that. With more texture mapping. And then a vague shot or two of the next Zelda game, which no matter what, we know is coming, and we kind of know what to expect out of it. So again, what I really need to see is like a third-party developer come out at E3 and say, no, this is awesome. We know how to program for it. We know what to do with these crazy controllers. Trust us. Either here, A, is a game, or B, like, just be patient because we feel really good about it. Now, I don't want to see Mario, Zelda, and Luigi again. Because I know those games are going to be good. And I know they're going to take full control of the Wii U's capabilities.
Right.
But that means, like, again, that means, like, three games a year... that are worth buying 10 games over the span of that system's life.
It's
not going to
exactly
cut it. Yeah.
So. I think you're being a little optimistic. I think it's like
three games in 3 years.
Think of all the games that you've purchased.
Oh, for
generated
the Wii?
A lot of far for the Wii. I mean, it's like,
yeah, I know.
last one was Zelda, right? I mean, because you just get Lego games. And,
now, to be fair, those Lego games are pretty fun, but, I mean, you know, one thing to the next.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, been there, done that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I
and
hear that a lot.
You get games that nobody really cares about. Like, these games are just...
You get the carnival games. You get, you know, inferior watered-down versions of good titles.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and that's a stigma that the Wii's got that's really bad.
And the Wii U is going to have the same thing because they're only, you know, meeting the current technology level right now, while the others are on the verge of moving on to the next stage.
That's
so
true.
It's still going to be exactly the same situation. It's just going to be the watered-down inferior games will be, you know, a little less sucky than they are right now.
Yeah, you know, the Transformers, like, game that's coming out for the Wii is, like, one of the last games probably that is notable, at least to us, for the Wii. It suffers from that. So, I mean, like, one of the bigger games of the fall is going to be Fall of Cybertron for the Xbox and the PS3. But the Wii is going to get its own, you know, little side thing. And
in one way, it's kind of a coup for the Wii or for Nintendo in general, because they're getting the exclusive Transformers Prime game for their systems, which isn't coming out on the other platforms. But at the same time, well, it's still a Wii game,
right? Yeah, and that's
how many kids are really clamoring for Transformers Prime, the video game?
Right, boy. That's
probably
the sound
about a quarter of the ones that know Transformers Prime even exists, which you know, 24 maybe.
Yeah, could fill a classroom, perhaps. Yeah, and the sad thing is, most of those kids, if they're less than 15, if they're younger than 15, they're going to be more interested in their older brother's Transformers game. So they're going to be more enthralled by Fall of Cybertron.
Yeah, hey, they're going to be sitting there doing Fall of Cybertron multiplayer with an older sibling or, you know, maybe an uncle on the weekend.
Yes, that's right. Oh, sad. So sad. So
yeah.
I guess, I don't know. I guess the good thing is the silver lining for Nintendo is after a rocky start, the 3DS has kind of found its footing.
Which is the same thing that happened with the DS. That was a little bit lukewarm in the beginning, but when the developers figured out what to do with it, which was basically a little puzzle and casual games, you know, and now the 3DS is getting to the same point where, okay, this is what we can do with this technology, and people like it.
Yes.
You know, we're finally getting to that stride.
Yes. Yes, Rob, you're exactly right.
Yeah, because to be honest, most of the DS titles I go back to the most use the touchscreen pretty much not at all. So.
Mm-hmm. And there's yet to be a 3D game, 3DS game that relies on the 3D, really. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, the 3D, it's the whole Nintendo thing. They stuck a gimmick in there, which, if you really have to, can be completely ignored in favor of traditional styles of gameplay. Because even most Wii games have an optional control setup where it's not motion controlled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'll tell you, in the Dragon Ball title, that's really helpful because the motion pickup to actually do the moves is really terrible on those games. Which, again, fun gimmick for a couple minutes, but after a while, you want to play the game correctly.
Are you talking about the fighting games? Dragon Ball Z fighting games? Those are pretty good, actually. Budokai 2?
Budokai series is actually a pretty solid series, but, you know, for the Wii version, they added in, okay, if you actually make the motions with your hands while you're holding the controllers that correspond with those moves, they'll do those moves.
That just sounds terrible.
Again, it's fun to do for a couple of minutes as a novelty, as the gimmick. But after that, you're really happy you can turn the Wiimote sideways and just play it like a regular game.
That's also because afterward, like, it's because you almost choked yourself with the cord when you were trying to perform those moves.
Yes.
Potentially, yes. Potentially. Yeah. especially when you're doing Trunks' crazy moves.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Your hands go 30 different directions.
Because I've played a game that involved sword fighting. And you needed to, and if you wanted
to,
you could. What's that?
Red Steel.
Yeah, Red Steel. Yeah, do you play that game?
I've seen it. I haven't played it myself.
So you take two like controllers, and if you want to do a quick downward attack with two of the things, you do this.
Yeah.
But and obviously, when you're playing a regular game, you don't just go like this. But you also have to do it fast enough so that it picks it up, because the motion pickup is terrible in that game. So I have hit myself in the forehead with the cord at least like 10 times in one battle.
That's awesome.
Or I smack the back of my neck, or I just hit myself in the face with the controllers.
Man. Video games.
See, it always struck me as odd that they didn't ever develop a Star Wars title for the Wii that actually made use of the Wiimote motion control for the lightsaber. I think maybe the Clone Wars game got close to it, but...
Yeah, well, it took till the Kinect. I mean, we finally got Star Wars Kinect out,
yeah.
So... You know, I mean, that's sure. Embarrassing enough.
Nintendo. If we're breakfast now!
Nintendo.
It's a cereal!
Wow!
Nintendo.
Super Mario.
System is a super part of this nutritious breakfast.
Nintendo.
Two cereals at once.
This Christmas, Pepsi would like to help you celebrate the holidays with a chance of winning a present from Mario in the Pepsi Nintendo Holiday Game, where you could win one of thousands of terrific Nintendo prizes, like these action sets, game packs, and best of all, the sensational new Game Boy. So hurry up and play before it's all over. Look for details on how to win your Nintendo prize wherever you see these Pepsi holiday displays.
Now, on your breakfast table, Donkey Kong brand cereal.
Crunchy barrels of fun for breakfast. Donkey Kong.
Woo!
Donkey Kong cereal.
The sweet, crunchy corn taste will drive you ape.
You love the crunch. Donkey Kong.
Woo!
Donkey Kong cereal. Crunchy barrels of fun for breakfast.
It's part of this complete breakfast.
Donkey Kong cereal. You love the crunch.
Hey, Sonic, let's race for a box of Honey Nut Cheerios.
Race for the taste, the honey sweet taste of Honey Nut Cheerios.
It's the honey nutty part of this complete breakfast.
Hey, Sonic, how can I get this to you?
Race for the taste.
Now, Honey Nut Cheerios offers you free Sega game tips right on the box, plus a chance to instantly win a Sega Genesis with the new Dr. Robotnik or Toe Jam and Earl, Panic on Funkatron. Chances of winning 1 in 10,000. Check mark boxes.
The evil M. Bison has made his bid for world domination. Now the clock is ticking. Who can defeat this madman? Capcom Street Fighter official movie fighters. Colonel Guile and his Street Fighters move in to take Bison out, but arms dealer Victor Sagat destroys their plans with his Devastator.
Fire!
So Guile charges the competition with the savage Street Striker.
Sagat, your time is up.
It's a countdown to the ultimate showdown. Fighting in the street
for control of the world.
Capcom Street Fighter, the official movie collection. Devastator comes with exclusive Sagat figure.
The power of Double Dragon.
Billy and Jimmy Lee in their Double Dragon Cruiser battle Shadow Master on his Shadow Raven.
Fire! Ride over, Shadow Master.
Double Dragon. Figures and vehicles sold separately.
New Soundwave.
All right, everybody, new releases. New releases for 2 weeks, since New Soundwave is going to a twice-a-month joint. So this week, it's a big one. Actually, both weeks are big ones. First up, Virtua Fighter 5, The Final Showdown. This is allegedly the last Virtua Fighter that Sega's going to make. Who believes that? Nobody believes that.
They've been doing Virtua Fighter for, like, what, 15 years?
Oh, 15? At least. Oh,
yeah.
At least.
I thought we had a Virtua Fighter 6 already, in fact.
Afraid not. So, yeah, this is the final, quote-unquote, final showdown. Inversion for 360 and PS3. No idea what that is. Bang Bang Racing for 360 and PS3. Rayman
that
Origins.
Wow.
Yeah, well.
Wow.
Bang Bang.
Okay.
Your mom. Rayman Origins for 3DS. Madagascar 3 for every possible system on Earth.
Okay. course.
And the best one of the week, The Sims 3, Katy Perry's Sweet Treats. Oh, yeah.
Get the hell out of here.
Oh, yeah. Katy Perry is now in your Sims.
Get the hell out.
With her sweet treats. Oh, baby.
You're being serious, aren't you?
I am. Her treats are the sweetest. Next week is a big one. Lollipop Chainsaw. So, Lollipop Chainsaw, guys. In it, it's a beat-em-up. Essentially, it's a beat-em-up. Kind of like Dead Rising, Left 4 Dead, that kind of thing. It's a zombie-killing game fest. But you get to play as Juliet, a chainsaw-wielding high school cheerleader in skimpy clothing, who is also carrying the severed, undead head of her boyfriend, who cracks wise during your adventure. So, yes, you play as a busty, also wisecracking, lollipop-sucking, chainsaw-wielding, blonde teenager cheerleader from the Valley, I think. And she's got her wisecracking, kind of douchey, but also kind of fun, disembodied boyfriend's head tied to her waist.
I'm broken now.
What is not to like about that, man? I hear the combat system, after all that madness I described, I hear the combat system's really neat. I hear there's lots of freedom in the combo system, so it's gonna be awesome. I hope the reviews are good. God, do I hope the reviews are good. Because I'm interested. I am! I'm interested. Okay, also...
You know what's really unfortunate about reviews nowadays for a lot of video games? They don't pop up until the day of.
Yeah, what is that?
What the hell is that all about?
Yeah, I remember GamePro. Like, GamePro used to have reviews way out ahead.
Yeah, and it's like, that's what I make for my decision to buy this dang game, you know? Like, if it's good, I'm gonna buy it. I guess they're just like, they don't want you to know whether it's good or not, so you'll buy it regardless.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, that was always my impression, because back when I first noticed that started happening, you know, when a game review didn't show up until the month after the game came out in the magazine, I knew, just skip it.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah, I bet embargoes are pretty rampant these days. It's that, you know, you can... The review you write this month is actually for 2 months down the line. And you can't talk about the game, can't even speak its name. It's probably pretty rough. I mean, movie reviews are bad enough these days when they pull that kind of thing on you. But, a video game is $60. So, at least with a movie, if you blow, I don't know, $10, I guess. At least it's $10. It's not that bad. But $60 is, like, a real investment, you know?
And see, I mean, okay, as a reviewer myself, and I think Rob will agree with me on this point, the hope is always to be recognized where you get, you know, free stuff, early stuff, for review purposes, but at the same time, I would hate to have that come with those restrictions like that on how I can use the information, basically restricting my opinion on it too, you know.
Yeah.
For fear of not getting any more stuff from the publisher or the company, you know. I mean, it's kind of a double-edged thing. Making that leap to professional is not probably as awesome as it sounds on the surface of just getting free stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I imagine so. So what kind of requests would be a deal-breaker for you? Like anything, obviously anything affecting your opinion, I guess, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it would have to be understood from the beginning that, okay, this is going to be an honest review, for better or worse. But, like, restricting the publication date would be a tough call for me, because my whole point is, okay, I want people to know the truth about this before they're in a position where they have to make the choice without any information going in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't really think there's a lot beyond those specific points that would be, like, in any position to be, like, a deal-breaker for this. I can't imagine much else they'd be able to do to really hurt the situation. I don't know, maybe Rob has a little bit broader scope.
No, I think you've pretty much hit it. I think, you know, in terms of the timing, it wouldn't bother me as much as any kind of editorial input, which would be an absolute no. We've worked for
ourselves for several years for a very good reason.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You know what? And I bet. So, say if Hasbro came along, and they said, here's a case fresh, C10, of the next couple waves of Transformers. You can review them, but we want to see the review before it's published. Is that okay?
Yeah, I would go along with that just because, okay, if they don't like what I'm saying, it just won't get published. I'm not going to have to put out false information or information I don't 100% believe in. If it can work that way and it's not going to affect the ability to receive more of that stuff later on, you know, that would not be a problem for me in itself. One concern would be, do I have to review all of the Bumblebees individually, or...
if I do, then I'm
and in fact, you know, just to speak to this kind of thing, I have talked to other toy reviewers on Twitter who have gotten taken off of Maddie Collector's freebie list for being critical of Maddie Collector. So this is a thing that actually
so stupid. I mean, come on. What you need to do is solve it by making a better product.
Mm-hmm. True. Or just read the review. And, I mean, if you agree with it, fine. If you disagree with it, fine also. But, like, read it and read the criticisms. Like, don't freak out because there are criticisms. I mean, read them and see if there's anything to take from it.
Thinking on it more, I'd be fine with, you know, an approval process because whether or not it gets published, hey, I've got the free toy here. I mean, I've been compensated already.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really matter if it doesn't get published then.
Yeah.
I mean, and the good thing is about you guys, like, as far as reviewers go, your reviewers, you two are got people who review something that you still genuinely like. So for you, in theory you still like these toys, but yeah, to you, like, that is fair compensation. Like, it's really sad when you get to a point as a reviewer or someone who critiques things where it's completely a job. And if somebody was like, you know, well, we're not gonna pay for this review because we're not gonna publish it, but you did get the toy, so there is, like, some compensation. It would be terrible for somebody to think in their heads, well, I hate toys now. It's just work. This isn't, like, I want money. I want actual, like, you know, cash money.
I think when it's, you know, toys or video games or whatever where they're providing you the free samples to review, you know, I think that needs to be taken as a form of compensation for your work. You're getting to keep this review sample, hopefully, and, you know, that's, if not the entirety of your pay, that's going to be a majority of your pay, especially if this work does not get published later.
Yes.
It's really just a matter of how you're taking the whole situation.
I mean, it's a funny thing. We'll have to get into the review mentality a little bit later on some other show too. This is interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. Peter, you went and got cultured a couple weeks ago. Yes. So you went to the Art of Video Games. So tell us about that. How was your experience?
It was definitely visually very nice. I guess you could come in and see it first. They pretty much essentially, the weird part is, they essentially make you walk through the entire museum to get to this little, and in the stuff that I sent you, you can see that it's like on the wall, it says Art of Video Game. It's very aesthetically pleasing. It's very attractive. You walk into the first room and it shows, you know, box arts and character arts, and it has several individual screens of different generations of gamers, the way they game and how they react and things like that. And that's all good and fun. And then the next room is essentially a projectors of various games that you can play, like Pac-Man. There's Pac-Man, there's Mario Brothers, there's some other games in there, iconic games, like, and then the next final room are all, consoles. From, like, you know, Magnavox, I forget specifically the name of it, I think it was like a Magnavox, 6300 or something like that. The ones with like the little it's like a rotating wheel or something like that. So that's kind of, that's all fun and good as well. But what I didn't really think was, good was it lacked a lot of substance, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely, it was very superficial. It just had interviews from people like talking about, oh, games were cool because you could manipulate a character. You control, and there's this one game where you control the wind and you get more power by running through plants or weeds and grass. It's called like mists or something.
I think it's Flower. I've seen it on PSN. If anything was going to show up at an art exhibit about video games, I'd have picked that.
I would also think Journey would probably be there somewhere too.
You would think so. Was Flower there? No,
I don't.
That's the first game from the makers of Journey. Flower is so artsy it hurts. So you essentially. I mean, you control a flower. That's it. That's what
it's,
you do.
It like flies around like planes and stuff like that.
Yeah, you control mm-hmm. it. You I control like it on the wind. Yeah, you can. It's like I said. It's so artsy. It's painful. It's painful.
So essentially, yeah. So the final third one, it starts out with like the Atari VCS. And then it moves from, I think that was like in the 70s.
76, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it went from the 70s through to the Magnavoxes, through to the, you know, the Sega Master System. So, abbreviated as the SMS, which is kind of funny. It was kind of weird because all it did was it showed all of these systems and then it had these little placards, which were about this big. And just told you, like, the most superficial stuff. It's like, the next generation consoles, like Xbox 360, PlayStation 3. And it's like, they have moved to the next generation. And now games are so, like, lifelike. And things like that. And it was just, okay, right? And I guess I understood, like, why. Because it was the art of video games. And it was like, okay, this is what art, you know, this is what it used to look like. This is what it looks like now. And each system had several different games, like they were classified. One had like action, one would be adventure and puzzler, and essentially you would just press a button at that screen and it would show you like a quick the game in action, things like that.
Okay. How much was it to get in?
It's free. It's Smithsonian. All Smithsonian museums are free. So that's the best part about Smithsonian is so you get pretty spoiled. So when you go to other countries,
you go anywhere else.
Yeah, anywhere else. What do you even have to pay? Like, I get to see the space shuttle, like a retired space shuttle for free, and I have to go to this place and see like a like B-52 for like $50.
Yes, you gotta pay. You gotta pay $50 to go into like almost any museum here in Dallas. This is Dallas. Mm. We got nothing, man. We got Jack.
I wonder what the museums in Chicago cost now.
Probably the same.
It's $25 mostly.
Yeah, it's like $25 and $10 or $15 to park, and it's just. Yeah.
So, I feel like it's I understand it's an art of video game, so it's cool, you know, show like fine art.
Sure.
How it's evolved through the years. Like, it's gone from pixel, like, you know, two polygons to 25,000 to. They don't even talk about polygons anymore.
Yeah, we don't. That's kind of a shame.
But it's got to that point where it's just like, okay, and now what? Like,
the future.
I feel like I haven't, like, really learned anything. It's more like a very nostalgic... It's essentially just a thing for nostalgia, which kind of, at the same time, kind of... It kind of pushes the same idea where, like, you know, gamers are these people who live in their basement of their parents' house, and they have, you know, they wear glasses and they're extremely overweight, and they have these, like, pants that are, you know, their shirts are tucked into their pants, and all they do is live in the past, and they talk about the nuances of these games and blah blah blah. And I feel like it played upon that stereotype.
Really?
Where it's like, yeah, I felt it was not very educational, because everybody that you saw would be like, oh my god, check this out, this is what I played when I was a kid.
Right.
And blah blah blah. And it was just like, it didn't feel like they really, it wasn't appealing to a general public, which would say like, hey, I'm gonna go check this out. What, you know, what was this, and what does it do to, like, to teach me, oh, video games are not just for, you know, people,
sure,
like, for, like, kids or, you know, 40, you know, 50-year-old men in their...
50-year-old men. That'd
basement,
be an awesome,
you know,
50-year-old. I'd say that.
No, that's,
yeah, I know what you're saying.
You know, it's like, that's what I feel. I don't know if... I saw XB's face. I'm not sure if that's what you think, but...
Well, it sounds to me like it's not really informative enough for the general public, and too general for anybody who'd be interested in the subject.
Essentially, yeah. Essentially, yes.
Yeah. But it sounds like there's no
the shortest sets.
There's no depth of information, or it's just not deep. It's just like, it's a bunch of stuff. It's like a glorified vintage video game store. Almost.
It was essentially a vintage display case.
Yeah.
Comes from 76 to now, and that's essentially what it was.
Interesting. Sad, actually. Kind of sad. I wish there was, and I bet you at some point there will be some form of this somewhere, either at a museum or maybe erected in California somewhere, but it would be really cool to have, like, a video game Hall of Fame where you could go and get a real in-depth kind of experience on how this medium was created and who were the minds behind it, and, you know, here's the technology, and it goes beyond just, oh wow, first generation Mint and Box Game Boy, oh my god, I had that, you know what I mean? Or it's like,
yeah, exactly.
Hey everybody, you know, it's Pong, you know, that kind of thing. It's not, that's not really the kind of enriching experience that I think other subject matters get probably in a museum. It's probably gonna take time before video games get that kind of respect, I guess. Maybe another generation or two of actual game players before there's an actual sense of history. But there's already a ton of history. I guess it's just right now people haven't kind of accepted it as this major piece of entertainment and media. You know what I mean? So time will tell. Time will tell. Hey guys, speaking of nostalgia, a new cartoon debuted this weekend, and it is the inspiration for the random hypothetical. So, time for the random hypothetical. This week, the Hub, in its continuing quest to recapture the magic and the financial power of the 80s, unveiled the Care Bears. Oh yes, the Care Bears. Now, it was a rough. It did. Oh, did it ever. Now, I will say this, in the grand tradition of all pilot episodes, this one was a little rocky, a little slow. The acting was a little rigid. You know, the Care Bears have not gotten comfortable in their own skin, their own very carpety, over-textured skin. Writing was a little slow. Pacing was a little slow. Funshine, I'm sure, has more potential than was shown in this episode. But Grumpy came off terrific, I will say. With that in mind, if you were a Care Bear, what is the symbol that would be on your cute, fuzzy little tummy? Think about it. Think about it. I'll go first, I guess. Just while you guys think about it, I'm not even going to ask you to name yourself as a Care Bear, because you can just call yourself whatever you want. But I want to know what is going to be on your stomach, on your nice little paunchy adorable, irresistible stomach. Which, might I say, also, think about this, though. When you do the Care Bear stare, that symbol is going to come to life for good or evil, one way or other. Remember? Because it expands and it flies at people. It's really kind of disturbing. That only happened once in the pilot episode, which I call bullshit. So they only did it once.
The way I remember it from the original series, it was just a piece of light that shot out.
Oh no, not now. This is 2012.
No.
This is 2012.
Don't be ridiculous.
So, so now it materializes and it flies out and
you
attacks.
You weren't even alive when the original Care Bears were around.
Every time I think of Care Bears, I think of gummy bears.
Oh no!
You get the next cartoon.
Get them mixed up.
They're bouncing here and everywhere. That's all.
Yes. High adventures beyond compare.
Of all the things to market as a cartoon, let's take gummy bear candy and fill the proper year around it.
Oh, by the way, Disney thought of that idea. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So it's awesome that they thought about that. They're like, hey, let's take this German candy. Okay, I am going to put a taco on my stomach. I like that idea, because, like, if anybody's hungry, if anybody really needs, if it's, like, 2 a.m., and the other bears are starving, they've got the munchies, they can call, you know, John over, and I can do a Care Bear stare, and we'll have, like, a bucket of tacos materialize. I'll be the most popular bear, in whatever the hell their Cloud City is called. I don't know. It's like everything starts with Fun or Jollyville or Bearific. I forgot what it was. This was a terrible pilot episode, guys. They didn't explain their origin. They only mentioned what their homeworld is called once. They teleported a girl onto the island without explaining why they do that, why she's not terrified, why there isn't like a manhunt for this girl. She was just completely unfazed that they teleported her to this world without any, like, selection process either. They were like, oh, hey, Funshine needs a playmate because we're tired of him asking for us to go play. So let's just beam a human up here to distract him for the day while we take care of our chores. And we're not going to explain why. It seems vaguely irresponsible. Also illegal and terrifying that they can do this.
Which is funny because if you I googled really quickly Care Bears.
I'm just thinking,
Josh. Bear. Oh no!
And he, you know what? The thing, there's a movie coming out in July called Ted, and essentially it's a guy who like pretend if it's like your childhood bear is actually alive.
Okay.
And he turns into like a vile guy, like curses,
oh, no.
Drinks, says like the most ridiculous stuff. That Care Bear looks like that bear Ted.
Okay, so but that's a good
so
that brings
worse
up
when you're so, abducting children.
that's clearly what happens to those kids when they grow up, because they're like, hey, where have you been the last week? I was teleported to a Cloud City where I partied with, you know, super intelligent teddy bears. And they either get locked up in an asylum or they get laughed at and, you know, called crazy. And they end up drunk serial killers. So that's what happens. That's what the Care Bears are actually doing to society. Okay, XV, what is on your stomach?
Goatsy.
XV wins. Okay, Rob, what's on your stomach?
And it was
stomach?
Really cemented for me when you said, okay, when you do the Care Bear stare, the symbol on your stomach comes to life.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Okay, Rob.
I'll take a Game Boy Advance SP. I mean, I'd like to always have one handy in emergency.
Okay, that's fine.
Well,
so you're gonna...
as far as, you know, fitting the genre we're in, Rob wins this one.
That's true, yeah.
Also, if this takes off with the adult male crowd the way My Little Pony did, I am predicting the term Bruins, just so you know.
Oh, get out of here. That's not good. That's sad. Okay, Peter.
God.
What power do you want?
All right,
what do you want tattooed on your stomach?
So I so this kind of helps a little bit. So I would actually have a beer.
Wow.
Dude,
okay.
On my stomach.
Well,
so,
okay, so if you need to have a party,
goes better
with John.
With...
That's right.
beer.
You want to get drunk and you want Mexican sounds good, so.
Right. And the thing is, what do you do when you see Goatsy and you want to forget about it?
Drink a
crap ton of beer.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And how do you make a Game Boy SP party even better? Beer.
Beer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And tacos.
Yeah, tacos.
2-1-0. Game over.
I love the power glove. It's so bad.
Like, I am Christian. I don't believe in this.
This has been New Soundwave. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Check out all our videos at tfvideo.net. New Soundwave is a Radio Free Cybertron production.